Jeremy Meeks.
I'm David Helm.
I'm K. Edward Copeland.
And this is Preacher's Talk, a podcast for preachers and those who love preaching. Preacher's Talk is brought to you by Simeon Trust and Nine Marks, helping you to preach better and run a healthy church. You can find out about these organizations at simeontrust.org and ninemarks.org. You can write us too, feedback@preacherstalk.org. This that we're about to talk about today, this whole thing on audience, comes after a lot of questions that we've been getting both at workshops. I know I've been getting them at workshops, got them through the feedback email. It's all about audience.
Okay.
Okay.
So here's what I want to do.
I used to like it though when you would always say like, today, gentlemen, today I want to talk to you about, and then you would announce it to us.
Yeah. Well, we'll save your critiques for the way I intro these podcasts for another time. Here's what I want to start off with. Hey, Ed, can you explain to us what your typical context that you're preaching to is?
Okay. My typical context on Sunday mornings is a predominantly African-American congregation in a manufacturing city. Most of the people in the congregation are tied into some kind of way to the big factory here, Chrysler plant. We have a wide range of professionals. We have lawyers down to returning citizens, but it's primarily working class African-American, a multi-generational.
Great. Dave?
So Christ Church Chicago is really right under the shadow of an elite university, the University of Chicago. We are one block from 2,400 undergraduate student dorms, intramural fields. But also, we're right in Woodlawn, which has a rich African-American tradition. And Chicago's South Side, more generally, you know, is probably 95-96% African-American. Right. So we stand really at the crossroads of kind of what Ed was talking about with his congregation. But, you know, all of a sudden you dump a university setting in there and you got a different kind of mix going on.
Sure. And then in my case, I don't really have a typical congregation I'm preaching to because I get the benefit of preaching all over the place. For the vast majority of my preaching stuff, all kinds of stuff from professional sports teams to students' churches to Ed's church to Dave's church where I get to serve. So all kinds of contexts. Ed, what other kinds of contexts do you find yourself preaching in?
So I just recently was out in the middle of Pennsylvania for a conference for a great group. I want to give a shout out to the Disciple Makers, a student discipleship sort of conference type of thing, which was, I don't know if I want to say cross-cultural, but let me just say there's only two other Black people there.
So you were doing cross-cultural.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, so typically I get opportunities, not just through the Simeon Trust, you know, to do workshops and perhaps stay over and preach, give a shout out to the fellas out in Portland, Oregon,
right,
where I got to spend some time not too long ago. So typically I get to do some cross-cultural ministry, whether it be for an organization or just friends.
Great. And Dave, what other contexts are you preaching?
Yeah, so I would say there are kind of three that the Lord has put me in. One, of course, is the week-to-week congregation. The other is businessmen. Mm. Like, you know, for instance, this last week, I was speaking at a businessman's lunch with 100 or a little more than 100. And that was kind of dynamic in the sense of, you know, Christians are inviting people that are exploring the faith, and it's really kind of focused in on those kind of one-off things. And then the other thing for me is pastors. So those are generally the three audiences. If we're back to audience, those are the three audiences: my congregation, yep, one-off events, and pastors themselves.
Great. I wanted to start that way because all three of us have multiple opportunities, multiple audiences that we're speaking to throughout the year. So, which would lend us probably some street cred to have a discussion about audiences, as we have to constantly be thinking about different audiences. So, Dave, is it important to take into consideration the particular audience that you are preaching to? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, great. This would have gone really weird if you had said no. So, Ed, help us out. Why is it so important to consider your particular audience?
Because the very definition of preaching is not just to expound or express your insights in a vacuum, but you're right. preaching to people.
Absolutely.
And those particular people have a particular ethos. They have particular backgrounds. They're, you know, it's never homogenous, but you're preaching to a group. And so it's always part of preaching to recognize the audience that you're preaching to so that the means and methods by which you are trying to communicate the message are crafted to get past their defenses and explode silently in their minds.
Right. Dave?
I'm totally with you on that. And I actually liked what you said about crafting. You end up crafting your message according to the audience. I mean, Jeremy, a lot of times you tell us, and you're right when you say it, you're not always right, by the way, but you're never in doubt. But on this point, he's like, look, the only people that matter to the talk you're doing are the people in the room.
Right.
That's right.
It's not the ones that didn't show up. It's not the one, you know, different folks. So, you know, I'm speaking last 2 days ago to 110 businessmen. Well, that's going to affect a lot on the crafting of my message.
That's right.
And it would be totally different if I was doing the same text to my congregation on a Sunday morning.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing. Like, how consciously aware are you, Dave, of the audience that you are speaking to? Doesn't matter what the audience is, but going into the thing, how consciously aware are you? What does that awareness look like as you prepare to preach to that group of people?
Yeah, so I've been in the same church now for 25 years. So I am very consciously aware of the breadth of the audience in front of me. Now, so that's an advantage.
Sure.
You would think. But also when you preach to your own congregation, you can kind of go, you can be lax a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think I know everyone that's here, but I'm not as consciously considering them or their place in life or what's happening at the moment on the ground. So I can get a little lazy given that it's my consciously aware audience.
Right. Okay. So keeping with that for a second, Ed, do you find the same struggles having preached in the same congregation for 4,000 years?
Exactly. Actually, it's just 21, but your point, that's 21 pastoral years. That's like 35 regular years. So the truth of the matter is, let me point out something that even within the congregation, when we were having two services, this was pre-pandemic, within the congregation, there was a difference between an 8 o'clock crowd and say 11 o'clock crowd. But to David's point, yes, there is the danger, temptation, propensity, whatever you want to say, to just assume that you know your crowd because you see the faces, not recognizing that all of us are progressing through different phases of life. And that's, I've been increasingly made aware of that because I have some feedback loops. And even one of the last pieces of feedback I got was I used too many sports analogies in my preaching, and that's not landing the way it used to land based on the composition of the congregation.
Yeah, right. All your athletes are now gone.
So as we're thinking about how to do this well, because really, like, audience is part of rhetoric in general, just considering the people to whom you are speaking. And so I think we always think about these things like inevitably to some degree. So really, we're talking about becoming more consciously competent about these things so we can do it better.
Right.
So here's what I want to know. What have you all learned from preaching in your atypical audiences or to those atypical audiences that has helped you become more considerate of just taking into consideration the audience in general?
Yeah, that's a good question. So at least two things just off the top of my head. One is with the atypical audience, I'm praying desperately because I don't know who I'm going to see. So I have to trust the Holy Spirit to help me in my crafting, you know. And again, you do some due diligence. You ask, you know, well, who will I be speaking to? What might the demographics be? And you can get some insight from that. But in my preparation, I'm really trusting the Holy Spirit to give me what I don't know, to give me some insight and to help me craft. And that's helped me in my local situation because I've stopped, and this is something I've had to learn. I've stopped just assuming. I pray more precisely for my local situation because I recognize that I don't know as much as I think I know, even locally, let alone when I'm out on the road. So that prayer piece for me is really important. And then the other piece is when I'm to an atypical audience, I try to make sure that I have enough time before I preach to somehow or another use my spidey sense or use just hospitality to get a handle on what's the temperature, what's the tone here, what's the ethos here. I'm playing detective, you know, when I come into a situation to see how people are interacting and what's going on, what's the mood and all that type of thing. And so I've learned how to incorporate that even at my local situation, because there was a time where I would just be sort of sequestered off trying to make sure that I'm got everything memorized and all that kind of stuff. But now what I do, even if it's just a few moments, I'll go out and I'll just greet the congregation as they're coming in, just so I can get a kind of a feel, a sort of sense of, okay, where are we today? What's the overarching mood and tone?
That's great. Dave?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just going to speak personally on this one. When I speak in another environment, it assists me in three ways. One, it brings back urgency to my main speaking congregation. So once I speak, you know, I'm speaking regularly now for 2.5 decades in one primary congregation.
Right.
And you can lose the urgency of the word for that particular week. You can kind of just feel that, you know, we're just going to float along till next week and I'll see you again. And the declarative, urgent need to respond to what I, you know, the burden, right? The burden for me is greater when I'm preaching to a congregation that's atypical. So just this last week, I was preaching to these businessmen. And when I got done, I was driving home and I actually was saying to myself, how come I don't preach like that a little more often to my own congregation?
Right.
So urgency, you know, urgency is there. We get too comfortable in the context that we're most familiar with.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say for me is the adornment within the message.
Right.
When you're, I need to think more clearly on the illustrations that would particularly hit the people in front of me. But to be honest with you, at times, some of the people that aren't in front of me. So I'm always thinking of a university crowd.
Yeah.
But I need to be thinking of the neighborhood crowd.
Yeah.
And so sometimes maybe I'm overplaying by way of adornment or illustration, the people that are in front of me. And then the last thing for me that where I'm helped, and you know, I'm telling you this seriously, is the appeal. I mean, the means by which I'm going to make the appeal from my argument. I mean, the argument's going to be the argument no matter who you're speaking to. But what you do with that argument and the means by which you're trying to persuade them, all of those things I need to pay more attention to. And I'm helped because I've speak in different environments to kind of pull myself back.
Yeah. I think it's interesting what you said about you, like kind of the dangers and debilitating effects of preaching to the same congregation for a long time, because they're kind of in some ways the opposite of the new guy who only gets to preach like once a year, who feels he's got to bring like every bit of everything he's ever got into that sermon. Right. So there's lots of downsides to that, but you definitely get the urgency, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is my one shot at doing this. And so to the young guys out there who are listening to this, like that urgency is a really good thing to have. And to the guys who've been in the game for a long time, and we're going to talk about this in a future episode, like you got to bring the urgency because you might be able to get up there next week, but you don't know, right?
Right. And that's maybe a problem, right? If I keep thinking, well, I'll see you next week. Or, you know, you come out of the pulpit and you go, well, you know, give it another run next week. Well, we're talking about God's word here.
Right.
And I need to be. I need some discipline on that. Go ahead.
I want to add another layer to what Dave was saying as it relates to the people that aren't there. One of the things that I'm struggling with right now, and we're thinking through and praying about it, and I've gotten some input, that is that, okay, we're live in the sanctuary, that's what I'm preaching to, but we're streaming as well. And very often, at least in the past, I had not been really cognizant. I hadn't been consciously aware that, okay, some of the stuff that I might be saying in the moment to those who are physically present might land a different way to those who are virtually accessing this. And so I have to be deft with that as well in these days and times.
Yeah. So I got a question, right? It sounds like all of us are working at becoming even more consciously competent at this. I'm imagining there's a preacher out there that's like, well, here's the thing, man. Like, I don't like my audience. I like the audience I used to have, or I like the audience that exists only in my own brain. What are the dangers of preaching to the church you used to have, or only to the church you wish you had? Dave?
Oh, man. I mean, there's two words in my mind. One is the pulpit, and the other is the pew. And I think some guys who are dissatisfied with their congregation just put all their attention on their, quote, pulpit work.
Yeah.
They're going to, you know, I'm going to do my thing and kind of endure who's in front of me. I guess one of the things that would help would be this thing that Mike Bullmore used to say before he got up to preach. He would ask himself three questions. Did I prepare well? Did I pray well? And this is the third one. Did I pledge myself to the people who will hear me today? Did I pledge myself to them? Because sometimes a pastor is not, in the moment of preaching, pledging his heart and his best to the people in front of him.
Right.
He's just going through the motions. And I think that would help him.
Yep.
You got to give yourself to these people.
You really do. Ed?
So I think this is a really great question, and it speaks to me in a couple of different ways. Number one, it's been striking me recently in my own personal life that part of spiritual maturity is embracing reality for what it is and not for what you wish it was. And that's part of the preaching pastor's plight, to embrace the reality of what's before you. In this technological age where you can watch production value, Disney quality production value ministries, you can get dissatisfied with where you are. But the reality is, this is where you are. This is where God has planted you. And he expects you to be faithful where he's put you, because he doesn't love anybody more than he loves the people that you're serving. And if that be true, then I have to learn how to love what he loves. And if he loves these people, I need to love them enough to give them the best that I have right where I am. And so part of that thinking through that whole thing, okay, why am I here? God has placed me here. God has planted me here, whether it be for this season or for a lifetime. And I'm going to love what he loves. And if he loves these people, I'm going to love them too.
And you may love them, but you just wish there were more of them, right? So I'm guessing that a lot of guys' discouragement is, you know, I'm preaching to the same 34 people every week. And when the holiday comes, you know, I'm hoping my in-laws arrive, because otherwise we're down to 12.
Exactly.
So that discouragement is big. I would recommend, you know, we should all go back every couple of years and read Kent Hughes's book, Liberated Ministry from the Success Syndrome.
Right.
You know, like, what is it that I'm really doing? And the 28 people in front of me every week, or the 85 people. And so just pledge yourself to learning again what it is you're supposed to be doing through the ministry of the word.
You know what? And can I add to that, and to think through what our ultimate evaluation is going to be? Because if I'm understanding Hebrews 13 correctly, I got to give an account. Mm. Would I rather give an account of 1,000 or these 25 that I actually know? You understand what I'm trying to say? That sometimes we think we want something, but we haven't thought through what we actually think that we want compared to what God has blessed us with. And it is a struggle. Let's be honest, because again, there's this whole idea sometimes of comparison or maybe even competition, you know, within the ministry. And we have to guard against all of those things, because when it's all said and done, we have to give an account for whatever God gave us. And the good news is, just like that parable, remember the guy, he gave him 5 talents and he came back with 5 other. He said, well done, good and faithful servant. But the guy that only had 2, he came back with 2 more. He got the same commendation.
That's right.
As the guy with 5.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. So oftentimes at Chicago Course, one of the things we're doing is we're listening to preachers from the past and trying to dissect the sermon and understand what it is we can learn from and learn what not to do. And one of the things we run into over and over again is, like, you don't understand, and we can do the best we can, but it's very hard to understand the context in which this sermon was given. And if you don't understand that, then it's almost impossible to understand all that went into that sermon, because there could be things that he's addressing in that time and that place that are very different than our time and place. And the more you can understand those things, the more you can understand the sermon. But sometimes preachers watch other preachers, like you're saying, Ed, and go, oh man, I just wish I could preach like him. It's like, well, he's preaching to somebody else, right? He's not preaching to who you're preaching to. Yeah. So just deal with who you're preaching to.
And this is where the word audience itself might hang us up at times, because audience is kind of a passive thing that they're going to hear what I do, as opposed to the congregation,
right?
Those who are gathered, the businessmen in the room. Audiences is a little impersonal for what we are really engaged in.
Right. Yep. So here's the thing. There might be no tougher place to preach than Sunday morning. I'm convinced of that. I've preached in almost every context humanly imaginable. I don't think there's a tougher context than Sunday morning because of the insane diversity of the crowd. Even if you live in Orange City, Iowa, and everybody happens to be, you know, Dutch or whatever, there's still a huge diversity in age, life experience, job, social status, all this kind of stuff. So we keep getting questions about particular audiences, and I want to hear your hot takes on how you do or do not take into consideration these certain groups. So, for example, Ed, how much do you think about the youth, and which is like anybody under 20, right? Not anybody under 40. The youth, how are you thinking about communicating them? Does it come into your mind at all? Is it a very high level thing? Or are you doing specific stuff?
Strangely enough, it comes to mind in my preparation all the time for two reasons. Number one, I started out as a youth pastor. But number two, I've found that if in the crafting of my sermon, if I'm thinking about and I'm using illustrations or approaches that speak to the youth, I'm better connecting to the adults.
If
I can put the way we say it in, African-American preacher circles is put the cookies on the lower shelf. If you put the cookies on the lowest shelf, everybody can reach them. So,
oh yeah,
I'm always trying to think. I don't do it well all the time, but I'm always thinking through that lens just because of those experiences as well as the culture that I came from.
Let's get into some more like specifics, because that sounds good. But what does that actually look like? What are you lowering? Because I'm assuming what you're not saying is like I dumbed down the sermon.
No. So two or three things. Number one, my diction. I'm trying to use simple words to express profound ideas. Mm. I'm also trying to, not in just in my diction, but in my even sort of my structure, I'm trying to package things in such a way that hopefully a child or a young person, if asked, could at least, if they didn't get anything else, they could at least get, okay, what the main point was, and here's how he sort of framed it.
Yep.
So, for example, this past Sunday, I was preaching from Luke chapter 6, verse 20 through 26, where, you know, Luke has his beatitudes, blessed is this one and woe to that one, so on and so forth. And the argument I was making was live your blessed life, not your best life. I made the comparison between those. Thirdly, not just the diction and the organization of the thing, but even some of the illustrations and the applications I tried to make sure it was sort of children and youth friendly. So some of my applications dealt with Instagram. You know how he talks about woe to you if men speak well of you. And I say, you know, we live in an age where everybody's trying to get likes. Well, some of the older people, that wasn't per se for them, but they have enough young people in their life that they could kind of relate to it. But it really landed with the children and the youth.
Yeah. Good. Dave?
I'm not too good at age, self-conscious age reflection in preparation.
Okay.
I think I'm a little better at what are the commonalities in the room, you know, and this is where I guess, you know, Tim Keller helped all of us with what are the principles that everybody's operating under, you know, whether it's science is absolute or the individual is supreme or my choice is going to always be my choice. And those things hit almost every audience. You might have to tailor it to the ones. I should probably go back and just do some more self-reflection on the age specificity. But I will say this, I work hard at being simple and clear without being reductionistic. But it would, you know, to be honest with you, listen to this, and this might be good for anybody out there. If you're a bit like me, it might be good to, maybe I should send an email to 8 people in the youth group and go, is any of this stuff hitting you?
Right.
Yeah.
Because right now I'm just assuming it is.
Right. I think that's good. So the way I usually tend to think about it is I'm thinking big level, kind of what we're all talking about. Like, what are the approachable things for any kind of human being? Right. And then saying, how can I phrase it in such a way that I may might take two or three swings at it in different kinds of artistic ways that would make sense to different kinds of people in the congregation? Now, you can't hit everybody with every little thing, or it's going to be the most boring and long sermon humanly imaginable. But just kind of consistently throughout the thing, you're saying, here it is. It's simple. There's this broad human level thing, and here's how we can all get our arms wrapped around this. I think that's kind of all we can do, and then get better at. And like you said, Dave, like, ask for feedback in this. So here we go. We're going to shut this thing down, but I want to know this. Got a guy listening to this going, man, I want to work on getting better at preaching to my audience. Give me one or two things, Dave, we're going to start with you, that would be an encouragement for somebody to make progress in this area.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a relationship. Preaching is a relationship. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a congregation with 64 people, just maybe spend some time with them. Get to know some of the actual needs, not that you then go preach to those things. But I guess I would say you'll help your preaching to audience if you're in more vibrant relationship. And some of us, you know, that's hard for some of us.
Right.
Some of us are introspective. Some of us are introverts. Some of us feel like we put out a lot with people and therefore I don't want to, you know, I'm exhausted by it.
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes you got to fight yourself. That would be a help. And then the other thing I would say is urgency for me, because, you know, I'm coming back to what I said earlier. Yep. I need a declarative burden and an urgent sense of the word that I'm asked to give this week, no matter who it is. And you preach to the same people every week. Sometimes that can not happen.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So two things in addition to what he's already said, which I agree with. To pick up on one thing that he understated is this feedback loop. You need, in your congregation, there needs to be some type of avenues by which you can get feedback as relate from the different demographics or the different parts of the congregation as it relates to how things are landing. I mean, it's good to even train them how to think about, you know, the sermon so that they can help you in terms of, did you hear the gospel, or what about, you know, this connection or that connection, whatever. That type of thing. And the only other thing I would say is spending time. I think Dave is right. The relationship is the issue. And I think that the more time you can spend in the world in which your people live, even if you're an introvert. So I've had to learn about cars, not because I'm a car guy, but all my people, you know, work with Chrysler. So
yeah, your sports illustrations aren't working anymore. So now you're in the auto body shop.
I got to get exactly. So, you know, sitting where they sat is really important, because you could pick up some things, even if it doesn't impact your sermon preparation, it will impact your heart.
Yeah, I got two on top of those. One with this. The first one is ask normal people about the text before you preach it.
That's
right.
Cool.
Like, getting feedback after is good, but just sitting down and reading with normal people and being like, what questions are you asking about this text? What stands out as interesting or strange to you about this text will get you thinking about how they're thinking. Plus, you're discipling people and teach them how to read the Bible. The other thing is, and this has probably been the most beneficial thing for me in this, re-preach sermons in other contexts, right?
Yeah.
So I preached it for this audience. Now I'm headed to this audience. I don't have to necessarily rethink the exegesis and everything, but I can spend my time prayerfully considering, who am I speaking to now and how can I tailor it? And if you do that, I mean, you just have to do it a few times, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, look at the tendencies. You'll preach it your own context better to your own typical audience, but then your atypical audiences will become much easier to preach to, because you're spending the bulk of your time thinking about them, praying for them, and shaping it for them.
I think those are great. Those are great things. Now the question is, will I be able to implement them? You know, I mean, that was great stuff, though.
I'll tell you next week. Until then.
For more articles, books, and podcasts, please visit 9marks.org.